I can find a place to stop the tape, and then we'll go into part two. Okay. So, are there questions at this point? Or comments? Okay. I like to digress a bit. Again, if you want to read, you can read the lecture. And it's a lovely, straightforward lecture. So it doesn't need a lot of embellishment by me. One of the places where cause and effect impacts people in a very, very dramatic way is worked on in rehabilitation centers. Now, that may sound very dramatic. And the reason I say that is I've been privileged to be able to do some training with some people who deal with foster children. I'm a volunteer for an organization, and the children are in foster care because many times the reason the children are in foster care is their parents are on drugs. And so they're trying to come to a more enlightened view of what is happening here, and they're trying to create systems where the parent is not labeled bad and the child is taken away until the parent becomes good and then the child goes back, because that system doesn't work. Instead, they're trying to more and more keep the family together and do a better job of reaching the parent and showing them that there will be consequences to their action, but not penalizing them too much, because a person can go into tremendous emotional bewilderment and pain at the idea of their child being taken away, and that would only lead them to look for more substances to numb themselves out with. So it's a terrible vicious circle that can get started. So they're trying to unhook out of this vicious circle and keep hope going for people who have already gotten themselves into a very difficult situation. So we're already in the vicious circle. We're already in this terrible situation when it comes to the attention of the authorities. And they've got some very interesting things to say about awareness. So when I teach, I like to take the black and white dramatic examples because we get those. The more subtle gray stuff, sometimes it's easy to overlook that. So black and white crisp examples can bring us into a sense of knowing about something, which enables us to apply the principle a little bit better to these softer, grayer areas. So what new drug rehabilitation therapy speaks of is that anything that numbs sensation and awareness is a drug. Anything that numbs sensation and awareness is a drug. So when they deal with people who have substance abuse problems of any kind, they widen the view at that point to include anything that would numb sensation and awareness. This is the exact phrase used, numbs sensation and awareness, in the lecture. And there's a reason. What the guide says is that one of the ways we disconnect our knowing is to lose awareness of the effects from the cause. Now, if you can just imagine just quietly walking up to something that is connected by a string and having a pair of scissors in your hands, and without too much thought, simply snipping the string between the two. And at that point, the two things are severed. Because it's a piece of string, that particular piece of string will never be what it was. You can repair it, you can tie it, etc., but the integrity of that string is permanently violated. Why did you do that? Well, we sometimes do things like that based on some unconscious thought processes in us that lead us to almost sleepwalk and do things without our consciousness being terribly involved. So imagine again, if you would, that these two things are connected by a piece of string, and you've got a pair of scissors in your hand, and for one reason or another, you decide to snip that. There could be many reasons to do that. You could be joking with somebody and think it's a practical joke. I'm just going to leave it at that. Imagine any scenario you want for where you would reach over and cut the string. The truth is, and by truth I mean that if this is a casual event that has no meaning, I never hear about it. I hear about the events where that string mattered. And people say, why did they do that? Because once the string was cut, we had no communication, or et cetera, et cetera. Well, the reason somebody cut that string was because they wanted it cut. That's why they cut it. Why did they want it cut? Their conscious mind may not have full awareness. Why would they not have full awareness? And that's where we need to look at how did we drop our own awareness? How did we manage to become emotionally distraught enough so that we didn't notice what we were saying or doing? How did we manage to become so busy that things escaped our attention? How did we manage to become so over-focused in one aspect of our lives that the rest of it just fell apart and we did not see it happening until it had become critical? In relationships, how is it that we just don't see it until somebody writes a note on the pillow and walks out the door? How can that happen? Well, it happens because we're afraid that it will happen. So across the board, let me go backwards from this. In the relationship with the notes left on the pillow, we saw it coming, but we hoped that it wouldn't happen, so we ignored it. Thinking like a little kid, if I don't do anything, it will go away. In the example of becoming over-focused in one aspect of our life, let's be more specific. Let's say you're focused on your career and your family's not getting any attention, so your kids leave home and your spouse is no longer interested in you. What will you be afraid of? We may be afraid because our self-esteem was more important to us than anything else. And even when we saw the indications that other things were happening in our lives, we were more afraid of losing this device that held up our self-esteem. And we decided to go into wishful thinking that everything else would be okay sooner or later. But we were still afraid to look and not willing to admit. So I'll leave it at that rather than backtracking to the examples. What I'm describing here is that we bear responsibility for not being aware. And like people who suffer from substance abuse, the tools that we use may be far more subtle and socially, not only socially acceptable, but society may applaud us for using them. Society may applaud us for focusing on our professions instead of our families. Society may applaud us for owning a nice home and having a nice car without anyone asking us what it took to do that. Now, for some people, they can do that easily. Other people, it takes 98% of their emotional and physical energy. There's nothing left over for anything else. So while the objective reality may look pleasing to someone else's eye, it's way too expensive for some people to obtain. But when we, in this case, we allowed an objective criteria for how we should live to determine our emotional lives. To do that, we have to numb ourselves. We have to anesthetize ourselves in some way. Otherwise, you would hear the pain in the voices of your spouse, your children, your employees. So employees can come to you, and they're not going to speak up too much because they don't want to get fired. But they come and they say, I have a problem and I'm not terribly happy. And you say, well, we'll take care of it tomorrow, going back to work. And a month later, 2 months later, because this person is afraid to talk to you or nervous about their job, they try to give you information again about how something's not working. And the next thing you know, that person's given notice. And that person may actually be critical to your operation. What I'm suggesting here is that this lecture about cause and effect is an invitation for you to see something like an employee giving notice and inviting you to go back and say, how did I contribute to that in ways I was not aware of? Why? Because number one, the next time it happens, I'd like to have more awareness so that I can interact with this person and perhaps head off or avoid this particular kind of decision. But the second reason to look at cause and effect is without seeing our own contribution to what happens in our lives, it is all too easy to say, employees aren't loyal. That guy quit on me. He never gave me any warning. I never saw it coming. It allows us to blame. It allows us to put responsibility for our misfortune onto somebody else. It allows us to feel the hurt as if we're a victim. That actually disempowers us. And it also disconnects us. And both of those are not conducive to doing it well the next time. So in understanding that there is always a cause and effect to the events of our personal lives, we empower ourselves to see our connection and our part in what has happened. We allow ourselves to stay connected by not feeling it's random chance. And we also enable ourselves to proceed into the future with a larger awareness of the causes and effects in our lives. Now, I started this off with a mildly rambling account of how there are different levels of awareness in the world. And I'm going to get political for just a moment, because I look at all the turmoil in the world, and what I do is I try to see what the cause and effect here is. Why are we so splintered? Why are we so angry? Why are some people numbed out and some people are protesting in the streets? What's going on here? It seems to me that it's a particularly raucous, a particularly emotional time period right now, and that is expressing itself in the political arena. So I try to take the lecture material and use it to look at the larger reality around me and say, what's going on? And one of the things that I perceive is that, once again, my perception, my point of view of no value to anybody unless it happens to match yours, is that there's a fear of compromise. There's a sense that we need to fight for what we believe in wholeheartedly and completely without compromise right now. Okay? Even if I'm wrong, let's just take that for a moment. If I'm right, or if I have a grain of truth in what I'm saying, that didn't just spring up unannounced. It came from someplace. So play a game with me. And if we go back and we find a place where compromise was offered and yet there was no integrity in the compromise. Let's say that happened over and over again over a decade of time. Then there would come a time where people simply weren't willing to compromise anymore. And to get them back to the table to negotiate, it's going to be important for us, and I mean us as voters, us as citizens, us as people on committees or in organizations that do interact with the public, it's important for us to identify causes like this. Where was the place where compromise was made and not honored? To try to find some semblance, some sense of cause and effect so that it doesn't feel like there's just a whirlwind in the air and it's too much trouble and I can't deal with it and I don't understand it and those guys are all crazy. Okay? They may be crazy. And because they are part of us, it can be very important for our emotional health and stability, for our belief systems, for our sense of unity, for our religious and philosophical well-being, to have a deeper understanding of what's going on our planet. Now, I don't have an answer for this. I named it just to get the thinking process going, that this can be a very difficult problem and none of us may have the answers. I'm suggesting that there are answers. And sometimes it is true that you need to let it go and move on. But there's a difference between letting it go and moving on and continuing in a dynamic forcing current based on events that may not have been perceived honestly. So when we enact with our government, when we enact with our leaders, and you don't have to be a democracy. It's not a matter of voting per se, but every citizen cooperates with their country. So on any level, if we have a better understanding of what is going on, so politically what that takes is a lot of reading, an enormous amount of reading. Sometimes more reading than a person can handle. And so it's not so easy to try to figure out what the causes of some of these things are. And that's assuming you could find the cause in writing. Sometimes you can't. Sometimes the causes are deals under the table, smoky back rooms, or situations that are just never written about. But what the lecture talks about is your belief in cause and effect, your reliance on feeling that there is a connection between what happens and what happened prior to that. I hope that's clear. So I'm going to pause here and see if anybody wants to go off on a particular topic. If you have any questions. So I made up a worksheet that part of my confusion is I had thought I had printed it off, and I hadn't. I had made up a worksheet that I put up on the website that took some of the guide's questions. It's always a delicate thing to make up a worksheet from the lecture because sometimes you're just rephrasing the guide, and it feels like plagiarism. But I guess there is some ability to pluck out things. But in the two-page synopsis of the lecture, the guide says, I would suggest that you all explore what makes you most unhappy in your life. What do you suffer from? Now, just from that phrase, there can be a problem in going any further than that. And that is our perception that we suffer. We may not have that perception. There is a difference between suffering and the perception that you suffer. So if someone says, what do I suffer from? I don't suffer. You're probably not going to be able to go much further in this lecture. But you're probably not the kind of person who would read a Patrick lecture in the first place. So what I'm suggesting is that there is a certain amount of self-awareness that is required to do this work. I have never known a human being who doesn't suffer from something. That doesn't mean that they're in screaming pain. I suffer, but I'm not in screaming pain. I have a bad day. But there are chronic patterns of things. There are things that I haven't resolved in my life that make me sad, that I wish I could improve. That's enough. You don't have to be in the middle of a breakup or have just lost your job and be facing bankruptcy to suffer. You can suffer from a lack of self-confidence. And that tiny suffering can impact you in a thousand ways every single day of your life, in every arena of your life. So when it says, what do you suffer from? Keep in mind that the guide, in his wisdom, may know something you don't. So what I'd like to invite people to do is, when there are suggestions and you do not understand them, to try them on like you were wearing, trying on clothing in a store. You try it on, you see if it fits. Some things don't. Okay? But you can also try on one thing and say, well, that doesn't fit, but another size would, or another style, or perhaps from a different department. The invitation is, find what seems like suffering for you. And if it's a broken nail, let's get trivial about this. Let's presume that you feel that you're suffering from a broken nail. The reality is, it's bigger than that. And the questions to start asking are, what does a broken nail mean to you? Well, it's just cosmetic. It's just how I look. Aha! That's a pretty big topic. How we look, how we dress, how we present ourselves to others is a reflection of how we feel we are inside. And if I can play with this broken nail for just a moment, if somebody who has a lot of self-confidence breaks a nail, they say, ow, and they get a file, and they, you know, make sure it doesn't scratch other people or themselves, and they go on with their day. And the fact that they now have a nail that's down to the quick and the rest of the nails have some a little bit showing, that's interesting. That's like a broken a crack in a driveway or a chip on a cup. It's of no major consequence. But if someone breaks a nail and starts to feel bad about anything, then what's probably going on there is that mask of looking good is brittle like the nail, and underneath it there is not a defined sense of feeling adequate, well prepared, good enough. And a small reminder like that is enough to give you an indication that your self-confidence may not be what you think it is. I suffer from this all the time. If I get dressed and go out and find a spot on myself because I wore something that was used or not cleaned properly, I'm extremely self-conscious of this. I don't have a lot of self-confidence about my capacity to look good to others. I feel that I have to work at that. So having spots on me from coffee or stains, it just says that I don't even care enough to bother to choose my clothes. You know, I take this somewhat seriously, probably more seriously than I ought to. It's an indicator of my self-confidence. It's there. I just need to be careful what I wear so I don't feel badly. But when I do wear something like that, when I do notice this crack, when I do notice this lack of self-confidence, that's a place for me to work, and I do work there. And periodically, a reminder comes up like that. So what I'm suggesting is, it's not that you should avoid seeing these things. I'm suggesting that you take these moments as invitations. And sometimes you are invited to look at the same deficit in your character or your psychic inventory over and over and over again. And you may even have become numb to that. You've seen it so many times, but you haven't known what to do about it. So you become numb to it, and you just pull away. Well, that's not going to get it fixed. And it's going to lead to more deficits happening that you may pull further and further away from. So there's a cause and effect going on here. And the cause is, I don't want to look at it. And the effect is, I don't see it. Which means it doesn't get worked on, so it could get bigger or scarier because I don't know what's going on there. And the effect is, I better stand back even further and look with more blurred vision at the situation. Because if I look at acute vision, I might see things I do not understand that frighten me and reflect badly upon me. So this is the cause and effect quality that can happen to something as minor as the initial signal that your self-confidence is wrapped up in your appearance by breaking a nail and feeling just a moment of feeling distraught about it for a moment. So starting with that simple sentence, I would suggest that you all explore what makes you most unhappy in your life. What do you suffer from? And then it goes on to say, the lecture goes on to say, then look into yourself and ask yourself, what is your intentionality in this respect? And when you can verify that there is a voice in you that says, no, I do not want to give it all my best, then you will find your suffering explained. Then you can draw the link between cause and effect. So this is in the section that's still talking, it's bringing back in the topic of commitment, and saying that for all your protestations, for all the superficiality, for all the fact that you signed up, that you showed up, that you got dressed, that you got ready, that you said you would do a certain task, if your heart's not in it, if you do not want to be there, somehow you're just going to forget things because your mind's not focused on remembering them. And you're not going to be attuned to the details of the situation that's going to happen because, to some extent, you want to be someplace else. So you're not going to be using all your faculties to succeed in a task. And you may be using a large portion of your faculties to numb out, to make yourself feel more at ease in a situation where you do not feel at ease. And with that split attention, if nothing else, with a split attention, you are not giving your all to what is at hand. You are not giving your best. And therefore, it is most unlikely that you will do your best. And that's where we get into a vicious circle. And I attached the vicious circle worksheet to this package because it's very, very useful when you start looking at cause and effect to see how you go round and round and round. And then notice where you simply can't see any other way to get out. And if you use the vicious circle worksheet and you draw it, it's set up like a clock, so it's kind of a fill-in-the-dots kind of a thing. And if you fill it in and you feel like, yeah, this is my vicious circle and there's no way out, I'm trapped, hand it to somebody else. Somebody you trust, someone who knows you a little bit, hand them that and say, what do you think? I would bet that that person could name three or four options that you have discarded and don't even think about anymore. Because, you see, they're not stuck in that vicious circle. They're not convinced that that is the only way. And they're perfectly able to see a lot of alternatives that you are not able to see. And the reason is that in a vicious circle, when you're stuck in something, it's because you're hanging on to something that you are refusing to let go of. To some extent, you have a negative commitment that is preventing you from making a more positive commitment to move on. So to some extent, that is the lecture. In the last portion, there are a lot of places where the guide asks questions. I have found it very useful when I make up worksheets to look for the question marks. Because when I look for, I take a marker, yellow marker, and I just walk through it, and when I see quotation marks or they have underlined, people who put this into format, underlined certain parts, quotation marks, underlines, and questions. Those tend to encapsulate key points of the lecture, and they also are places where the guide is specifically trying to enlist you to consider the process. So it makes finding a place to get a hold of the lecture a little bit easier when you say, well, just look for the question marks. Look for the questions and answer them. See what happens. So does anyone have questions or comments about the lecture? No, it is a quiet group. Okay. Well, then it's in the hour and a half. Presume we're done? Yes, go ahead.
I looked through the written work that I read, and I found a question mark on it, and I thought maybe I could ask it now.
Sure.
It's on page 5, and okay. It talks about inwardly knowing important connections between causes from former lives and effects in the present life.
Okay.
And so I wonder how to look at that.
Okay. I'm going to put a caveat here, which may seem unfair. The guide gave a lot of lectures. And sometimes what he says in one lecture really needs the support of when he mentioned it other times. So I'm going to add to this. In another lecture, the guide said, there may be people who recall past life experiences, but it is not a necessary process in this lifetime. In other words, the task that you have in this lifetime, whether or not you believe in reincarnation, you're here now, this is the life you've got, the guide says you've got everything you need. If you do believe in past lives, and you receive some information about that you believe, okay, then the guide is inviting you to treat that as extra information.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not necessarily going to make your job any easier, because you have no way of knowing how many of the pieces you have.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm inviting you to consider the statement there from that point of view.
Okay.
That the guide proposes that you do have many lives, but you don't have to believe that. You can believe that you have this one. And if you receive information about other lifetimes, you need to be very careful in applying it, because it may or may not relate to this lifetime, and you may or may not be bringing all the information you need forward.
Hmm.
Does that?
Okay. Oh. Yes, and and there's so much to in this lifetime. There's plenty.
Yeah.
Enough. You know.
Well, I rather liked the place where the guide talked about. He was asked questions about this, because you wonder how much information am I supposed to find? You know, what am I supposed to do? How many different types of therapy am I supposed to take? And basically the guy was saying, don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of personal interest.
Okay.
So if you're not interested in that, leave it alone. It doesn't matter. And if you are dealing with some revelations or realizations or images, you know, they're there for a reason. Just like everything in your life, according to the guide, is here for a reason. Now, let me riff off on that and see if this will help. Remember that from the normal view is that children are brought into the world. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That parents make a decision and they bring that child in. Okay? The child may be a gift, but we create, you know, that child. And Pathwork has a different philosophy, and that is important to understand these lectures sometimes. Pathwork says that we chose to come.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference there, although it's subtle, is very important. We chose to come because we have something to do here. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
We have a task. We have some work to do. So we're not here because something, you know, our parents wanted a big family. We're here because our parents wanted a big family, and that was our portal. And also, what the Pathwork proposes is that not that we have total choice, but that the choice of parents, whether it's made by us or other spirits, the choice of parents was designed to assist us in what we're here to do. Once you look at things from that perspective, and I invite you to do it just like trying on clothes.
Okay.
Once you look at things from that perspective, past lives make more sense. Those were also adventures in learning. And some of those adventures may resonate with what you're doing today. And if they're in your experience as a spirit, they could leak through. And the leaking through might be because of the resonance. So what I'm saying is that if you spent four lifetimes trying to learn something and you're just about ready to complete that process, there might be little bells ringing in your head because you've spent so much time and effort trying to learn this. And I'm speaking about it from, I generally speak about it from a positive point of view. That it is the resonance that brings those memories through.
Mm.
You can choose to reject them or not, that's up to you. But if they come through and if you're looking for an explanation, that's how the guide explains it. But since you're here to work on something, you are given all the materials that you need. And the reason I went off on this riff is when we talk about cause and effect, and I think that they're underneath this passage. People say, well, cause and effect, but I didn't invent this life. Well, the joke is in Pathwork, we say, yes, you did. You invented this life. You chose your parents. You chose your height and weight, your talents and skills. The fact that you need glasses, you chose all that. And you chose it so that you would develop in a certain way where you would have the best opportunity to learn what you came here to learn.
Mm.
And I think that sometimes the lectures can feel confusing because there's a lot more underneath. They can stand on their own, but they also incorporate, they mention some other concepts and philosophies that aren't spoken of at length.
Mm-hmm.
So in this talk on cause and effect, the guy doesn't say it, but the presumption is that cause and effect includes your choice of lifetimes. The fact that we chose, everybody who's on this phone, chose to become a mature adult during the first two decades of the year 2000. Which means that we are prepared to handle all this nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
even though it may be nonsense. We are prepared to handle all this chaos. We're not only prepared to handle it, we thought it was a good idea. And I say that with laughter and a smile on my face, because chaos can sometimes help you get something done faster.
Mm-hmm.
Where a more static society has different advantages and disadvantages. So we don't necessarily choose a static civilization or phase of civilization because we're a coward. Sometimes we choose that because we're developing a little bit more bravery, that speaking up in a static civilization takes a lot more courage than speaking up in a civil, in a time period where everybody's protesting.
Hmm.
Is that kind of, I was hoping to kind of flesh that out for you.
That's good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. So that's where when you try on, when we extend beyond conception to the idea that a spirit wanted to be here today, it changes the point of view a little bit than if we just got trapped mm-hmm. here and we don't know what it's for. Anyone else have a comment or a query? Okay. Well, have a lovely time wherever you are. It is evening here, and I'm about to go light Hanukkah candles. So I hope you're going to have a lovely day or evening. And thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you so much.
Oh, no worries.
Thanks, Jan.
It was a pleasure.